with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Thursday the 25th of November and this is Game On. Coming up today, we're live from now until 9pm with live build-up and commentary as the Republic of Ireland take on Slovakia and the Tala Tigers road to the World Cup continues.
They both step back in a purposeful way. It's Connolly! Goal! The Republic of Ireland lead in Helsinki in the 10th minute. Megan Connolly with the strike. Corpella couldn't keep it out. And Ireland lead on the road in Finland.
Before all that, we have the prospect of another new Man United manager to discuss. Plus in rugby, Bernard Jackman is excited as Tadhg Furlong signs a new contract.
Conor Murray to Bundee Aki, how he'd love to score. But it's both his parents, Sam Owen. There for Murray. Left they go. Furlong, look at the power of Tadhg Furlong! What a try!
Now, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Now, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined in studio by Pearl Slattery and Chloe Mustaki. We'll be building up to the Republic of Ireland women's game against Slovakia, which kicks off at 7 o'clock. And we will have live commentary and analysis right up until 9 o'clock. Now, the teams are out. Well, the team for the Republic of Ireland is out. And Vera Powell has named an unchanged from the previous two World Cup qualifiers. Pearl Slattery, talk us through her team.
Yeah, obviously, look, it hasn't changed now, Marie, in the last few games. I think it's great to see the likes of Atkinson, Little John and Whelan come back into the squad as well. But the biggest thing for me now is consistency. So if you think of Lucy Quinn, when she started against Australia in the last two or three games, she was brand new to the squad. And now she's three games with an unchanged 11. So I think consistency now is a big positive for this squad. And hopefully that will help now put a stamp on today's game and next week.
Chloe, just in terms of formations, what do you think she's going to go with?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's hard to say. She's changed it up a bit in the past few games. I personally, and we've mentioned this before with Karen Duggan, I'd like to see Katie McCabe play higher up the field, obviously against Sweden and, you know, some of the tougher sides we've played. Katie's played more of kind of a left wing back, but I'd like to see Áine O'Gorman maybe take, you know, that left back position where she's played numerous times before, get Katie higher up the field. So we might have a 4-2-3-1. I'd preferably like to see that, but I'm not sure whether she'll like to be a bit more safe and choose maybe the formation that she went with against Finland. So we'll see, but I'd definitely like to be, you know, see us be aggressive and get the likes of Katie McCabe and Heather really higher up the pitch.
Okay, so the 11 that we'll take to the pitch is Brosnan, McCarthy, Louise Quinn, Niamh Farley, Megan Connolly, Denise O'Sullivan, Katie McCabe, Áine O'Gorman, Heather Payne, Lucy Quinn and Jamie Finn. So the formation will become a little bit clearer when we do head towards kickoff. Pearl, just in terms of that starting 11 and formation wise, what way do you think that Vera is going to approach the game?
I hope, look, as Chloe said, I hope we really go from the start, that we press high. And you know, if we look at Slovakia, although they looked at a good result against the likes of Sweden, they only lost 1-0, so we have to give them that respect. You're not going to be guaranteed any 3 points in an international game, but I just feel, and Vera said it during the week, if we go out with that intensity, that will and that want, hopefully, you know, the likes of Heather Payne and stuff can really get at their back four, because I really don't think they're that good. We spoke about certain centre-backs that we think, you know, we could target and get at, so hopefully we can go at them. Look, it's a home tie, hopefully the crowd can get behind us and get the result that we need tonight.
So the game is in Tala, and that is very much becoming the home for women's football in Ireland. You guys both played there on Sunday. Unfortunately, it didn't go to plan. Chloe, you ended up on the losing side in the FAI Cup final, losing to Wexford Utes. But just in terms of playing in Tala, does it feel like it's home for women's football when you're playing there?
Yeah, I think so. I think we can continue to strive for more. But I think at this stage of the progression of the women's game in Ireland, I think Tala Stadium is perfect. It's a good size and, you know, it allows us to, you know, to at least be with a crowd where we can be, at least be excited. And then we saw that with the Shells fans, you know, on Sunday.
the flares.
Yeah, the flares. It was great to see. And, you know, football, women's football is on the up. And we just need to keep supporting that.
And what about you, Pearl?
Yeah, I love Tala. I think the atmosphere and stuff was unbelievable on Sunday when we were playing in it. And look, I get the whole thing. If you gave us a choice, I'd probably go back to the Aviva, but with bigger crowds. But I think right now, especially for the Women's National Team and the Women's National League with cup finals like that, Talat's the perfect spot. And we've seen that. I felt the playing on a Sunday. You could just feel the atmosphere. You could feel the crowd. And you can't beat that as a player.
Yeah, and I think we've seen the women's team react to that as well. You know, especially in the game like the Australia one, you could just sense the crowd getting behind them, willing them on, and playing such an important role. And as well with the women's game, that crowd is becoming a real part of what women's football is about as well. And I'd imagine that the girls, when they're out there playing, they're probably seeing some of the faces that they see all the time, following them around, going to the games, and just being comfortable in Talla as well. And sometimes when you're bringing your family along, it's nice to go to a place that you're really familiar with and that it's easy enough to get to and things like that as well. So I think it's definitely worth giving it a chance. And when crowds do start to grow, and we know that they are going to grow and they're only going to go in one direction, definitely going back to the Aviva Stadium would be brilliant. But for now, tell us where it's at, and hopefully there will be a result there. Okay, we will be continuing our build up to the game a little bit later on and getting into a little bit more detail about what could possibly unfold in Talla later on. But first of all, we are going to talk to Kevin Palmer, journalist, about the news that Manchester United are in advanced discussions with Ralph Rangnick, and they could be appointing him as their interim manager. It seems to be a bit of a bolt from the blue, Kevin, really, because he was somebody that wasn't in any way linked with this role before now.
Well, you say that, Marie. I think they were looking for an interim manager, so at that point that there's only so many people in the world they can go after, and Rangnick is highly respected in German football. Maybe he doesn't have a record that backs up his reputation in a way at club level. He's not won the Champions League, or he's not won anything kind of on that scale. But for German football fans, and for German managers like Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea, and even for Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool, they see him as a kind of a godfather of coaching, a revolutionary who kind of set up the way German, the high press German, the high intensity, the Gegenpress as they call it. That's all the Ralf Rangnick kind of way. And Tuchel particularly would say he's been the main man in his career. So it's a bold appointment. I think it's a good appointment. We've spoken for many years about how Manchester United are being badly run, and the people calling the shots at Old Trafford don't know what they're doing. And that's fair enough, I think, given some of the decisions we've seen. But this to me seems like a very good appointment to the end of the season. They are then looking for a 2-year period with Rangnick, sort of pulling a few strings behind the scenes, and somebody of his football experience, I think, on the board and influencing the decisions at Old Trafford will be very welcome, given what we've seen with Ed Woodward down the years, which I think everybody would now conclude that Ed Woodward is not the man to lead Manchester United forward, given the decisions he's made that have backfired time and again.
Kevin Hatchard, Bundesliga TV commentator, also joins us on the line. So I think when it comes to Ralf Rangnick, it seems that we're just starting to learn a lot about him, even though he has been around for quite some time. If he does get the job, which it does seem like it's going to be the case, Kevin, what can we expect from him when he comes to Manchester United?
You can expect somebody who's going to want to change things very, very quickly. He is an impatient, intense guy. He's going to want his team to work incredibly hard on the ball and without the ball. His style is all about speed, really. That kind of vertical style. He wants to get from A to B as quickly as possible. And when they lose the ball, they want to win it back as quickly as possible. This is a guy that is used to having control. It's a guy that, if you look at his career, certainly recently, it's been about being more than a coach. It's been about changing things at all levels of a football club. I mean, this is a guy that built up pretty much the Red Bull system from scratch. So everything you see at Leipzig now, in terms of their youth development, the way they develop talent and sell it on, in terms of how they've been able to get the right coaches in, most of that has been down to him.
So some of the things that you mentioned there, I'd imagine would raise quite a few eyebrows when you think about the Manchester United squad that are there. And one of them is working really hard off the ball. It's not something that we'd associate with Manchester United at the moment anyway. How do you think the players are going to react to him if he wants to come in and try and change things pretty quickly?
I think like any coach, if he can show that his methods work, he'll be able to win them over. Now, obviously, the one you think of more than anybody else, whether fairly or unfairly, is Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at his numbers, he doesn't press that ferociously. And maybe there's going to have to be a bit of adaptation from him and a bit of adaptation from Rangnick. Rangnick is clever enough to find a way to get something out of Ronaldo and still have the general principle of what he wants to do, but the one thing he won't do is completely compromise his footballing principles just to allow Ronaldo to do what he wants. So there could be fireworks. Rangnick couldn't shy away from that. He can be a very demanding, very intense guy. You think of the kind of Pep Guardiola mould. You're talking about that kind of guy, a football obsessive who wants things done very, very quickly.
So, Kevin Palmer, with him coming in then, where does that leave the situation with Manchester United's permanent manager? Are they still going to be in the hunt for Mauricio Pochettino?
I think Pochettino was the top choice, and at the start of the week, the perception in the English media certainly was that he was available now and that they should be able to get him straight away. Clearly, on Monday, there was a meeting with Leonardo, the PSG chief, and Pochettino, and it seemed to be at that point that the mood changed somewhat and that Pochettino kind of made it clear that he wasn't in any rush to leave PSG, and PSG was certainly in no desperate need to get rid of him, given their finances. They can do what they want, basically, with whoever they want. So he's in place until the end of the season. Now, if Pochettino wasn't to succeed at PSG, and given what we saw last night when they were pretty well beaten by Manchester City, you would think, you know, he's got a tough task to win the Champions League, which is kind of what he needs to do to be a success at PSG. If he doesn't do that, if he was to leave PSG, maybe get fired by PSG, would Manchester United really want to take him at that point? I don't think so. So maybe Pochettino's chance for the Manchester United job has gone. And if Rangnick does come in, as Kevin said, he's a guy who likes to have fingers in every pie at a club. I'm sure he'll want to have a big say in who the permanent manager is. Whether he wants to be that man, we'll find out in the next few days whether that's his ambitions. I would think an overview at Manchester United, if he's given kind of a chance to really influence the club, to really put his mark on it, he'd want to bring his own manager in, someone he knows well, someone he respects, and someone who probably follows his philosophy on football. So I would think Pochettino, as the bookies have already done today, he's well down the pecking order now, because it feels like his moment has come and gone at Manchester United for the time being, and we're in a different period now with Rangnick calling the shots, and it'll be very interesting to see where he takes it.
It's quite difficult talking to two Kevins here on the radio.
So, I feel for you.
Kevin Hatcher, just when you think of the career that Rangnick has had and the amount of people that he's influenced, and just, I guess, you know, as you pointed out there with the Leipzig, the Red Bull Leipzig project, how successful that was, and just the impact that he was able to have on so many different clubs. How come he hasn't came to the Premier League beforehand?
Well, I think he's been interested before, but I think the timing hasn't necessarily been right. I believe that he has had kind of talks with clubs like United and Chelsea in the past, but this is a guy who has very specific demands, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think clubs do sometimes get a bit squeamish about him because he is demanding, and if you're comfortable in your role, he's going to produce a scenario where you're not comfortable anymore, because you can't just cruise with Ralf Rangnick in the building. He wants everything, and he wants it yesterday. Now, I don't think that's a bad thing, and I think if ever a club was crying out for that kind of impetus and that kind of surge, it's Manchester United, because, quite frankly, they have lurched from bad decision to bad decision, and that has contributed to the inertia they've suffered in recent years. So for a guy like that to come in with all of the experience he has, I think he's going to be a big boost to the football club, but you have to see it through. There's no point just allowing Rangnick to come in and then saying, oh, no, well, we don't want to change that. We don't want to change that. No, definitely won't do that. You cannot do that. It's all or nothing with him.
I hope one of the policies that he brings in is that he puts an end to Twitter apologies. That would be a really good place to start.
Good call, Maria. Agreed.
Kevin Palmer, just on the players themselves, like, I can imagine, well, I'd love to actually be a fly on the wall, really, when you think, when they do get these news, just given everything that has happened over the last while and the fact that they felt they've had to apologise for so many of their performances. So you know that the players themselves obviously aren't happy with their own standards. But given the amount of detail and the demands that Ralf is going to bring in, I'd say it's just going to cause a very difficult atmosphere, really.
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, footballers, when a new manager comes in, tend to change their attitude anyway and tend to try and impress the new man at the helm. But I mean, it'd be interesting to see what coaching team he brings in, whether it's a German coaching team. I can't imagine that Kieran McKenna and Michael Carrick will be hanging around for too long in their current roles. They might look to put them into different positions, maybe with junior clubs or junior sides at United. I don't know, but that's going to be the key in a way, that I think Ranieri will be the sort of overseer of a revolution that he'll want to put in at Manchester United. The issue is, we're coming into December in a season. If he is given basically a 6-month contract to do what he can do to a football club, will that be long enough for him to make a serious impact on the first team? And if not, will he look to sort of bring in people that potentially could take over in the summer, even now, you know, like an assistant manager that could work under him potentially at this point? I don't know whether that's even a possibility, but I think the fact that it's a 6-month issue, that we've seen before, it can work. Benitez did a reasonable job at Chelsea when he came in. I think he ended up winning the Europa League. Obviously Tuchel last season at Chelsea is a permanent job now, but it was a brief period that could have, it was a trial almost in a way, and he ended up winning the Champions League. But we have seen caretaker managers where players with big egos almost don't take them seriously, don't respect them, say, well, this guy's not going to be here for long, I don't really have to listen to him, I don't really care what he has to say. So that attitude could easily be in the Manchester United dressing room. We've seen in the last few weeks that there are issues there in terms of attitude, in terms of people who don't want to give their all in certain games, and Ranieri won't stand for that. If he puts his foot down, will Paul Pogba turn around and say, well, I'm not going to be here and you're not going to be here, so I don't care what you think? You know, that's a possibility, but it's all part of the soap opera that we're going to watch at Manchester United. We've all been engrossed by it over the last few weeks, so why not have a bit more of it now with a new manager?
Yeah, it does feel like it's the latest chapter. And Kevin Hodgson, what does he usually do? Does he usually bring a team with him? Is he happy to go in on his own? What's his form in the past?
Well, I think recently he has been more of an overseer. So if you look at Leipzig, for example, he only stepped into the coaching breach when it was necessary. So generally he's been happy for other coaches to come in and kind of bring their own coaching teams in. He'll have his own ideas, I would think, and he will have a network of people, I imagine, that he's worked with within the Red Bull system that he would be keen to bring in, and that would be at all levels, I would think. And again, this comes down to, what are they going to allow him to do? I think it's very interesting that the reports are suggesting that, yes, it's a 6-month coaching position, but then there's a consultancy role afterwards. It would seem to me to be crazy to bring a guy like that in and then say goodbye after 6 months. There is a real opportunity, if they play this right, there is a real opportunity for Manchester United to actually build something really quite significant, because they have the resources, we know that, they have the players, but it's about long-term strategy, and that's what they've been missing so badly in recent years.
Okay, well, it definitely is going to be interesting, that's for sure. Kevin Palmer and Kevin Hatcher, thank you so much for joining us and bringing us up to speed on the latest chapter in the Manchester United saga.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high-protein cooked chicken breast filling. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back, and it's now time to turn our attention to rugby. Bernard Jackman is with me on the line. Bernard, some really positive news from a rugby point of view today. Tadhg Furlong agreed a contract extension with the IRFU until the end of the 2024-25 season. And from watching him over the last while, I think that's the news everybody wanted to hear.
Yeah, look, the performances on the field were brilliant in November, and to get Tadhg to sign on for such a long-term deal is just the icing on the cake, really, and massive statement for Leinster and for Irish rugby. And he's the best tied prop in the world at the moment, and for him, he signed a one-year contract last year. Obviously, the market was pretty difficult in COVID, and you know, people were putting two and two together and thinking maybe, you know, he would go away or look to play abroad for a period, but no, he's re-signed now, and yeah, he's in great form, and injury profile has been good, so huge positives.
Yeah, definitely. And as you said, like, his performances over the Autumn Nation series has just been phenomenal, really. And when you think as well of what Andy Farrell is trying to do with this Ireland team and just how the game plan is developing, Furlong is such a crucial part to all of that.
Yeah, he is. And to be honest, we've got some really good depth now in nearly every position. And I think the only two positions that we don't have, you know, a similar level of performance behind is tight up prop and out half. And unfortunately, they're the two positions that have the biggest influence on winning games. So that'll be something that'll be on Farrell's mind. It's not that the lads behind aren't really good players. It's just that Sexton and Furlong are world class and highly influential. So you know, that's the challenge. But look, at the most important thing is to keep those two in form and playing in Ireland. And you know, we've done that today.
So to the untrained eye then, what is it about Furlong that makes him world class?
He's got very soft and sympathetic hands. So the way Ireland are trying to play now, there's an onus on our forwards to be better on the ball. And you know, we've all talked about you know, the back row and the second rows and their mobility and their speed. And what Furlong gives you is power in the carry, in the tackle, a very good scrum, good lifter, but also the ability to be a ball playing forward. So, you know, when there's opportunities to play out the back or to offload in contact, he's able to do that. And then he's also, I mean, himself and Porter have just such strong leg drive that they're able to get you over the gain line, even when the defence is dense and compact. And that's pretty rare. So he's probably the prototype all around prop. We've never had one like him. You know, John Hayes was absolutely brilliant. Mike Ross was class and a key part of a very good Irish team. But to be honest, you know, Furlong he's basically strong in every single area, and that's very rare.
Yeah, and long may it last as well. So there was no contracts for a while because of what was happening with COVID and all the uncertainty, but there's some starting to go around now. And Jack Carty is someone as well who's signed up for 3 years with Connacht. And Andy Friend says it's a really good statement by the province and the player.
Yeah, it's massive. And Jack has become a real leader down there. He's obviously one of the homegrown players. Connacht have, you know, probably the most diversity, they have the most diversity of all the provinces in terms of people coming from, you know, all ends of the earth to represent the jersey. But also there's a spine of homegrown players, and they're very proud of them. And Jack is, you know, is probably the talisman at the moment. He's playing really well, and I just think, to be honest, that deal would have started. The negotiations would have started a month ago or 6 weeks ago when he was out of the Irish squad. And sometimes when a player's left out of the Irish squad, it's easy to be tempted by, you know, foreign fields. And there's a really strong market for out halves at the moment. McGinty going to Bristol, George Ford going to Sale has just kicked off a bit of a craze and a search for 10. So Jack Carty would have been someone who would have been on the radar of those English clubs and certainly, you know, the French clubs. So for him to stay for the next 3 years in Connacht shows the ambition. He believes in the ambition there, the project they're building on Andy Friend. And yeah, it's a huge, huge boost for Connacht.
So while the provinces and Ireland are tying down players, Munster have... Well, I suppose not decided to. Stephen Larkham has decided that he is going to leave the province at the end of the season, so he's going to return home. It was expected that maybe he might stay. He'd made some noise that perhaps he would extend his contract, but ultimately going home was a bigger draw for him, it seems.
Yeah, look, he's getting a chance to go back to the Brumbies, and there's a stand called after him and George Gregan there. So he's a legend in Brumbies rugby. And you know, it is difficult when you have when you're that far away from home and you've got, you know, children. And I think, you know, sometimes we all just think it's all about the job, but there's families who have to sacrifice for coach. I'm not saying that, you know, an opportunity to live in Ireland is a sacrifice, but at some stage there will be a draw to go home, and he's obviously, that time has come now. And if he had to re-sign for a year in Ireland with Munster, potentially there was no job to go back to. That's the fickle nature of pro sport, that you kind of need to take those opportunities when they come, because you're not sure when they'll come again. So he's made that move, and it's caused a little bit of instability in Munster, because, you know, 6-7 weeks ago we were told all the coaches are re-signing, and now there's a rumour that Johan maybe isn't, I would certainly, from what I believe, hasn't signed up yet anyway, and maybe isn't going to stay. So yeah, it's funny how one piece of the jigsaw changes, and suddenly it can have a bigger effect. But look, we'll wait and see what Munster do in terms of their head coach, and obviously then I think once that head coach position is solidified and clear, they'll start looking for an attack coach to replace Larkham.
So you don't think that an attack coach is going to come in until Van Graan has decided what he's going to do with his future? And
I think that'd be bad management. I think it'd be bad management, Maria. I think I think the head coach should have a say in who the attack coach is going to be. And you know, it'd be a disaster if you filled the attack coach now and then went out looking for a head coach and you found out that he or she was an attacking coach themselves or had somebody that was very close to him, kind of like Nina Barr was to Razzie Erasmus or Tony Brown is to Jamie Joseph. So you don't want to, I suppose, close off that option of giving the head coach the freedom to put his own stamp on things, in my opinion.
And what do you think is the best thing for Munster to do now? I just read an article on RTÉ earlier on, based on Keith Earls' book and how he felt that the head coach turnover is a fundamental problem. Do you think that the best thing for Munster to do is to keep Van Graan, or do you think that it's the time to change is now?
I think Johan is a really good guy, and I think there is a lot to be said for stability. And I know myself. You know, when Michael Checa was in Leinster, a lot of people were calling for his removal after 3 years, and the branch stuck with him. And obviously, year four, we won a Manager's League, and year five, we won a European Cup. So I do think it can take time to get there. Obviously, Munster are in a very competitive competition in the URC because Leinster are so strong, and then obviously, Europe is becoming harder to win, even for Leinster with the resources they have and the quality they have. So it is hard, you know, certainly Munster aren't a million miles away. So look at all, the people who work with him day to day will know best. I don't know the inside out of it, but I think if you back Johan now, you need to back him for two or three more years, and then you let him, you know, add to the staff as he sees fit and finish it off. So it's a big call to make because realistically, Munster, because of their legacy and success in the past, they're judged on trophies, and they haven't been able to win trophies for a while, and that's the reality of it. So it's just a case of whether the powers that be believe, and the players, I suppose, believe Johan is the right guy for it. And I do think stability is worth a hell of a lot, and particularly if you're going to lose an attack coach, maybe that's more of a reason to stick with what you have. But I definitely wouldn't be signing an attack coach until you knew who exactly was going to be the head coach.
That is fair enough. And just back to the international scene again, there was a lot of surprise yesterday when World Rugby announced that they approved a groundbreaking motion that will allow players to switch national allegiance during their careers. So that new regulation will come into effect from the 1st of January. It had been lobbied for quite a while, particularly by the Pacific Rugby Players Welfare Group in recent years. So it means that players can represent a second team in Test Rugby provided they have a blood connection to the country and have not been capped in the previous 3 years. So look, ultimately, what does this mean for Ireland?
I don't think Ireland are going to be affected by it, to be honest. I think it should give some of those tier two countries a lift, particularly the Pacific Islands.
What does it mean for Ireland in the World Cup?
Oh yeah, sorry. It basically means that Tonga in particular look to be a team that could benefit massively. I mean, there's players of the quality of Charles Piatow, George Moala, Pete Aki, who played for Connacht now with Toulouse, Negani Lomapé, Israel Folau. So they're just some of the names who in theory could qualify for Tonga, and that's obviously going to make the World Cup more competitive. And I think, to be honest, that's the really bright part of this, or positive part of this decision, because even the Pacific Island lobbying group felt that it wouldn't get voted in. They were nearly surprised themselves. So a lot of people who had in their own interests would have voted no, have voted yes. And I do think it's going to give particularly the Pacific Island countries a huge boost, and they need it, to be honest. Fiji are getting a lot of resource from World Rugby, and rightly so, but Samoa and Tonga, who were incredibly strong, you know, at the start of professionalism, have just found it hard to compete, and this is something hopefully that will give them a lift.
Yeah, it will be interesting for sure. And just finally, before we finish up, we were working together around the lines, Bernard, and there was a huge amount of focus on Razzy Erasmus and the video that he released criticising Nick Berry over his handling of that first test. He has apologised now and withdrawn his appeal against the suspension that he got for that misconduct, and it feels like it's probably the right thing to do, really.
Yeah, look, I think this is the first time he's come out and said sorry. And there's rumours he's going to take a sabbatical from the game. There's rumours he's eyeing up an opportunity in Montpellier as a consultant. So it's going to be... Razzy has shown us since he was at the time in Munster, he's certainly interesting. And I think this story is far from finished. But it is great to see him, you know, apologise and accept that he was in the wrong.
Absolutely right. Well, there is games taking place tomorrow as well and over the weekend, and we will preview them in tomorrow's show. But now we're going to take a very quick break. Bernard Jackman, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back very shortly with our build-up to the Republic of Ireland versus Slovakia.
Game on 2FM with Green Farms. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farms on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, we are building up to the Republic of Ireland women's team against Slovakia in a crucial World Cup qualifier. They're always crucial, in my opinion, anyway. So that game is kicking off at 7 o'clock and we will have live commentary. So Pearl Slattery and Chloe Mustaki are with me here in studio. We got the team a little bit later on and we have the formation now, and it looks like Vera Pau is opting for five at the back with McCarthy, Quinn and Fahey, flanked by O'Gorman and McCabe on the wings, midfield of O'Sullivan, Connolly and Finn, and then up front Lucy Quinn and Heather Payne. Chloe, just first of all, your reaction to what looks like a five at the back now, whether it will stay like that or we're not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like she's gone for the similar formation as we had against Finland. I mean, we'd like to think that the likes of Katie and Anya, who have, you know, massive fitness levels, will be able to get up and down the pitch all night long. And we'd like to see them higher up and, you know, being aggressive and helping create play with Heather and Lucy. So let's hope it's more kind of a three at the back than a five throughout most of the evening. But I know obviously Slovakia will create threats as well, so better safe than sorry. But yeah, would definitely like to see us create more further up the field than be defensive.
Yeah, and I think as well with Slovakia, just given their reputation has just been like that hard-working, dogged, determined team as well. You would think that given the players that we have as well compared to them, that we should be able to go out and go after the game.
Yeah, look, as I said, I think in any international game, you're never going to get an easy game, and we have to respect Slovakia. But, like, for my opinion, and, you know, speaking to the girls and stuff, the strides we've taken over the last few months, I just really hope that we go at them from the start now here in Tallaght, crowd behind us. And as you said, Marie, we've good quality players now. Even if Slovakia do go into a low block and try to frustrate us, where previous years we've probably fell into the trap of, you know, getting down to their level and not being able to break them down. But look, you're looking at the likes of Katie, Denise, you know, Heather, really going at this team now tonight. Please God, a home advantage, and we take the game to them. I expect us to have more of the ball than we have had in previous games, so hopefully now there's good quality when we do get on the ball and we can punish them.
Yeah, and look, the good thing, Chloe, as well, is that, you know, we're expecting an evolution from this team. You know, we're expecting them to develop, and that is purely because we now have quality players in that starting 11 and we expect more, which is a real positive.
Yeah, and you know, I've said this previously over the past few months, like, most of our squad now is based abroad playing full time, and we're reaping the rewards of that now. I mean, the performances, again, you know, the friendly against Australia, the performance against Sweden and Finland have all been super positive compared to maybe the performances that we would have put in over the past 2 years, where they would have been a lot more defensive. Now we're being more attacking minded, we're getting up the field, we're being aggressive, and we're creating more, keeping the ball longer. So we want to see a lot more of that tonight, and hopefully a few more goals as well.
Well, now that you mentioned the value of having players playing abroad in the top leagues in the world, Carrie Kelly, our reporter, spoke to Megan Connolly, and she asked her about the benefits of the Irish playing in the WSL.
It does benefit the team in a way. You have a lot of the Irish players playing in England, one of the best leagues, and I think a lot more players have done that in recent years. which has helped the team grow and develop. A lot of players are playing in other countries abroad at the top leagues, which I think is a big factor that is improving us and will kick us on even further, and hopefully help us get that qualification, is everybody's experience playing in those tough games. But yeah, it's nice playing your teammates. It's not nice losing to them.
And I suppose, yeah, that does bring it back then to Ireland, you know, in this kind of quest, you know, for qualifying for a major tournament. But I mean, there are, you know, such brilliant players playing with all these big teams in leagues all around the world. And like I said, that really can only benefit the Irish squad in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you see Leanne Kiernan at the minute with Liverpool. She's had a tough time, but I think recently she's really, you know, you see she's getting player of the months and player of the weeks. And I think having a player like that coming in on form into camp can only help us. And there's loads of other players. You see Katie getting, you know, awards every week. But everyone in their respective countries and their leagues is doing their best at the minute, which, as I said, can only benefit us.
Pearl, some really good points made by Megan Connolly, but when you take a look at the team sheet there and you look at the back five and you have Savannah McCarthy and Anya Gorman in there, like, they're not away playing. They're playing here and doing a really good job and keeping players who are playing away out of the team as well.
Yeah, I said it on previous shows as well. Like, since Sav has come in, she's proven that you can play here, you can do well, and you're not just going into the camp to make up a number. You can start the game. So I suppose she's inspiring everyone that's here in the country. The same with Anya. She's been doing it for years. It's a credit to her as well. Any 11 now, you're nearly not shocked that Anya is in, and it's, you know, great applause to her for the standards she's kept up. And it's brilliant to see. It's nearly, you look at them, don't you, Chloe, a pride, because you're playing in the league. You know what, it's not as easy. We're not training every day. People have to work, all the commitments that goes into it. But Sav has shown recently you can go in, do well, and look at, like, Diane. She must be shaking her head at times thinking, I'm away in the States training every day, really good standard, and she can't get in ahead of McCarthy. So it's brilliant to see.
Yeah, it really is. And we saw Vera Powell and a lot of the members of the team as well, Chloe, watching your game. And, you know, they weren't just watching it as fans. They were watching four players who were going to be in the squad are in the squad playing. So they're watching their teammates.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think the level of professionalism as well has grown in, you know, in Ireland over the years. You know, you obviously have Sav and Anya, and to be fair to them, I'm sure they're doing a lot outside of their club training as well. And, you know, the girls here at home base know the extra efforts that they need to put in, week out, to be able to compete with, you know, with the girls who are playing abroad. So, and, you know, a lot of the girls here are willing to put in that time and effort, because obviously some girls are reaping the rewards, like Sav and Anya. So it's great to see, and it'll only help, you know, the level of the league here improve if girls are putting in that effort week in, week out.
Yeah, and we know how important that is as well. Right, well, Tony O'Donoghue did manage to catch up with Vera Powell before the game. Let's hear what she had to say.
Vera, I guess you're in the lucky position of being able to name an unchanged team again, and I guess we were worried about Katie, but you're happy that she's okay.
Yeah, she trained really well yesterday. We didn't put her in blocks, but she had no reaction at all, so she's completely fit to play.
So what is her role in particular in the team tonight?
Well, she's on the left side and she will move forward. And she has a very good feeling that she developed that actually over the last year, of when to go forward, when to intercept, when to push through and when to hold. And that gives such a balance in the team.
How important are the rest of your defenders then to give her that license, I guess, to get forward?
Yeah, it's the covering players, we call that. They need always be there to back her up. So if she's losing the ball, that somebody's there. But that's the same for Denise, and that's the same for the strikers. And the moments that Anya on the other side, Anya Gorman, will go, that's also the same.
Now, it's important to have that continuity, isn't it? I mean, to build on the success from Helsinki.
Yeah, it gives stability. And stability gives a few more automatism, and automatism brings a bigger chance to win.
What about Slovakia? I mean, you're not underestimating them, I'm sure.
Well, Slovakia is missing their number two, their striker, what we just saw. We don't know why, because she's on the list. We'll see how they get on. They are very structured, very compact, and they have a few very, very good players who can change a game.
Vera Powell, the Ireland women's manager, there speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. Pearl, just on Katie there and her role and the fact that we do want to see her getting up the pitch a little bit more, Slovakia is probably a good team to at least try and see if they can make that work.
Yeah, I think, look, it was a positive, wasn't it, that Katie wasn't missing tonight. We all know what she is and means to this squad, and just having her out there is massive for us. But like Chloe said earlier, when we looked at the formation, we're hoping that it's more of a back three with the three centre-backs, and it'll give the likes of Anya and McKay, Katie, obviously the freedom to go forward. And as I said, I expect Slovakia at times to go into a low block, but for me, you know, Katie has the quality to break that down, and hopefully we see it tonight and she gets a few shots off, or, you know, she's creating for other players in the final third.
Chloe Pearl was in with me for the Sweden game, and when we were speculating about team selection beforehand, we weren't sure about the goalkeeper, and had a good chat about it actually, and just the fact that we weren't really sure who the number one was going to be going forward. Courtney Brosnan stepped in there and had an unbelievable game, and she did really well against Finland as well, and has really started to make that jersey her own.
Yeah, no, I'm delighted for Courtney. I played with Courtney for years growing up through the underage ranks, at under 17s, under 19s level. She was fantastic. She's an excellent stop shotter. So, look, I think that we can expect the same from her tonight. She's probably someone that we need to kind of rally behind to keep her confidence high. She is still young, you know, but I think she's excellent, you know, and she's getting ahead of the likes of Grace and the new keeper, Megan, who are starting for their teams week in, week out, whereas Courtney, I'm not sure, has had that luck, you know. So, you know, it's credit to her as well. She's come in and she's performing well, and yeah, I think we just need to get behind her, and we should see, you know, her talent shine through.
Probably we could actually nearly see her grown in confidence as the minutes ticked by, especially in that Sweden game. She just, with every shot that she stopped, she seemed to become almost just a better all-round goalkeeper. So Chloe's right, if we can keep supporting her and just giving her that confidence, because for so long the narrative and the conversation around this team was that there was a major issue with the goalie.
Yeah, for years there had been. And in fairness, when Grace came in, she did well. And when Courtney came in, you know, she had those few mistakes. But I think on the last show, Marie, when we were doubting her, you know, we were applauding her then throughout, mm-hmm. because we were all rallying behind her, trying to get behind her. And look, I said on the last show as well, the goalkeeper position is a very lonely place, because if you make a mistake, you really are punished. But, you know, in fairness, the girls up front have helped her. And with the last two games, some of the saves she's made, she got player of the match. It was just brilliant to see, and I was delighted for her myself. I don't know her personally, but as I said, it can be a lonely, lonely place, goalkeeper, because when you make a mistake, you're the one punished. But in fairness now, she's been on a good run. She deserves that number one spot. So please God she can keep it, and obviously have another good performance tonight and Tuesday night.
Absolutely. She is such an important part of the team now. Okay, we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be back shortly to continue our build up to the game.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
It's almost 7 o'clock on 2FM with My Expressway. Enjoy more ways to pay, including contactless, mobile and lead card. It's a game changer. Find out more at expressway.ie. Ireland versus Slovakia on 2FM.
Welcome back. I'm delighted to say that I am still in studio with Pearl Slattery and Chloe Mustaki, and we are continuing our build up to the Ireland-Slovakia game, which gets underway at 7 o'clock. And we have live commentary here on the show with Adrian Eames and Alan Cawley. And we're going through the Republic of Ireland lineup, looking at the formation that Vera Pauw looks set to go with, which will be five at the back. Two up front, Lucy Quinn, who's made a really good impact, Chloe, since she came in. I mean, she kind of I'd been trying to get her what's that word for saying when you join Ireland? She was trying to transfer to Ireland anyway, and she got there in the end after trying for quite some time, but she's done really well.
No, she has, and to be fair to her, from the get-go she got into the starting 11, and you know, she's proven that she deserves her chance. You know, I think in terms of her link-up play when she's been playing, it's been quite excellent, and her retained possession has been quite good as well. I feel that every time she gets on the ball, her decision making is great as well, and you can tell that she has experience in, you know, in the WSL and leagues, that, you know, that decision making is important. So it's been great to see, and she's definitely added something to the team. So hopefully we'll see a bit more of that today, and hopefully we'll see her linking up, you know, with the likes of Heather Payne and Denise O'Sullivan to create something.
Those up front positions are getting really sought after now, Pearl, and I was really surprised that Rhianna Jarrett wasn't in the squad.
Yeah, look, I think Heather, and as Chloe just said, Lucy's come in and done really well. Yeah, I don't know what it is with Rihanna. Is she playing a lot at a club? Look, the competition's there and it's great because for years we've probably been looking for strikers. You look at Leanne as well, who's in flying form and is obviously not in the squad at the moment. You have Emily Whelan as well there. Don't forget Amber Barrett. They're good problems for me, for the country. You know, for years, as I said, we've been looking for top quality strikers, and I've really been impressed with Lucy since she's come in. She's settled in so well from the Australia game, and then I think, you know, everyone's just going crazy at the moment about Heather Ardenty. She's gone up another level. Like, I think of Heather in the league, I think just going to the States has took her up fitness wise and stuff, and I'll be fascinated to see where she does go as well after her college career. But I'm hoping Heather now and Lucy can have a real impact on tonight's game.
Yeah, because certainly in the last couple of games they've really shown what they're about, and you know, we're talking about stability and the importance of it, and the fact that we have an unchanged starting 11 here, Chloe, is just so important really when you think of this campaign.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. The fact that we've remained kind of injury free as well is great, and you know, we want to go into the break now, the Christmas break, you know, with as many points as we would have expected to get. So another 3 points tonight and hopefully another 3 points next week against Georgia would really give us a bit of a cushion going into next year. So no, it's brilliant, and look, all I hope for is a few goals. You know, we would have struggled in past years with scoring, would have been, you know, played very defensively, and now we're getting a bit of flair from certain players like Heather, like Lucy, who are coming in and creating something that we would have lacked in previous years. So no, it's good competition, and look, I'm sure Rihanna will be in and around the squad again going forward, but no, stability is good, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I asked Vera actually about the importance of these games and whether or not they were a must win pearl, and she said they're must lose games, or they can't lose them.
Yeah,
I'd agree. Look, you look at the group, and again, no disrespect to Slovakia, but if you're looking at that as a coach and staff's point of view, Slovakia and the likes of Georgia, for me, if we want to qualify, we have to pick up points here, and it has to be 3 points. And I'll back the girls. I'm just thinking of the strides they've took over the last few years, last few months. I'm just really hoping that they can go out and put in a good performance. But to me, the 3 points is the biggest thing, and hopefully we get that anyway. If it's a 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, loads of goals, I don't care once we get the 3 points.
And another positive, Chloe, before we cross over to our commentators, is that here we are talking about what they need to do on the pitch. We're not talking about sponsorship. We're not talking about record crowds, and there probably will be one. We're actually talking about what they need to do to qualify for a major tournament.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think there was a lot of talk you know, a couple of months ago about, you know, equal pay, and that's exactly what we want to see. But we need to talk about the quality of the players that we have as well. Mm-hmm. And to be fair to the girls, they've showed that over the past few games, and they deserve the recognition on the field as well, because they're phenomenal and they're only getting better.
Absolutely. Pearl, give me a prediction.
Oh, I'm gonna back here, girls. I'm gonna go 2-0.
Chloe?
3-1.
Oh, very exciting. We'll have plenty of goals, hopefully, anyway. Right, it is time now to cross over to our match commentator, Adrian Eames, along with Alan Cawley.